Hi again, everybody. Jeff Rentz, and tonight we take you on a profoundly fascinating voyage during which you will hear things from firsthand eyewitnesses that you will find utterly incredible. As we go to England for a return visit with Michael Roll, who, along with physicist Ron Pearson, have, to their satisfaction and others, proven mathematically and clinically that there is no death, that life continues at a subatomic level, perhaps forever. Back in the 1980s, the talk among the scientific community was about the missing, in fact, they're still talking about it, the invisible part of the universe. In order to show that the invisible part of the universe is teeming with life, Michael Roll and Ron Pearson knew that they had to repeat the experiments of Sir William Crookes and other international teams of scientists using modern, sophisticated recording equipment. They had already proven survival after death 100 years ago and published their own findings in the leading scientific journals of their time. 100 years ago now, keep that in mind. This quote from the French Nobel laureate for medical science, Professor Charles Richer, sums up exactly how far these pioneering experiments had progressed. Richer said, quoting now, "There is ample proof that experimental materializations should definitely rank as a scientific fact," end quote. This is a Nobel laureate. The only reason these revolutionary experiments failed to have the impact they should have was because they lacked the mathematical theory to back them up, i.e., recent existing discoveries in some atomic physics, that's subatomic physics. Everything now depended on a fully developed materialization medium coming on the scene and dedicating his or her gift to scientific advancement. A report in the Psychic News dated 26 February 1983 announced that we had now had in England, says Michael Roll, a materialization medium carrying out experiments where recently deceased people were being physically reunited with their loved ones here on Earth. This particular report was written by Alan Crossley, the world's foremost expert on this type of phenomena. Alan had taken part in Helen Duncan's experiments and even written her biography. There is no way Alan Crossley could be fooled, especially as his own dead wife materialized. This type of phenomena cannot be faked because we would all know in 2 seconds if we were talking to a dead loved one or not. We have today on the program, coming up this evening, it is very early morning, of course, in England, with Michael Roll, the good blessings of two mothers who have been physically reunited with their dead sons on many repeatable experiments. We're all sure tonight that the listeners out there, most of you will agree that this is perhaps the greatest love story ever told. And they will give comfort and hope to many of you tonight and to everyone listening, in fact, who has lost a loved one. This shows that even losing a child is only a temporary tragedy. The bond of love cannot be broken. We are all immediately reunited with our loved ones when our turn comes to shuffle off this mortal coil. And with that, let me welcome back Michael Roll, who with Ron Pearson was on this program as a team. They were on, in fact, January the 5th. You can hear that program in the archives or purchase your own cassette copy of it. Welcome back, Michael.
Oh, good to be back, Jeff. What a response from last time.
I was going to ask, but I almost hesitated because I have a hunch it's been pretty amazing.
Oh, it's very encouraging, especially as I've been censored in my own country for 20 years. I've always been saying once it goes, it's going to go big, and it's a good thing. The longer they censored it, the bigger the explosion.
Well, it kind of built up pressure in the pressure cooker is what
happened. That's right, yeah, pressure cooker with the safety valve broken. That's the analogy I give. Because we've only got to present this case. It's like the round earthers totally destroying the flat earthers. They didn't have to carry on fighting once they've destroyed them. And so once everybody knows about this, it gathers its own momentum, you see.
How was Ron's personal response from his peers and other scientists after the first appearance?
Well, this is great because it's all come down on the webmaster, you see, because on my website. So he's filtering out all the scientists for me to just hand on to Ron, and they can all get together, and very shortly we'll get Ron on the internet, and away we go.
Good. All right.
The main thing is for this program, Jeff, is we covered last week the two things that Sir William Crookes didn't have from his experiments that were missing. Was, of course, the missing mathematical theory, which we covered with Ron Pearson last week.
Right.
But the other most important thing, which we're going to do this week, is he didn't have recently deceased people coming through at his experiments.
Mm-hmm.
The one person that was materializing at his experiment in his laboratory was a person called Katie King, and she had died so long previously that he wasn't able to do the scientific exercise of getting relations there to check her out.
Uh-huh.
Now, what's so important with the medium that I came across in 1983 was that recently deceased people were materializing and walking around the room and talking to us. So what we have done, the scientific exercise, is to get their loved ones there to check them out.
Of course.
See, it's quite useless if somebody materializes and says, "I'm the Queen of Sheba."
Right.
But you can't shout the Queen of Sheba out. But recently deceased people materializing, you get the loved ones there. Is this who they say they are? That's what we asked the question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and you're going to hear some wonderful, a great love story tonight.
The issue of dying and death is actually used as a fairly overwhelming tool by many people and many groups of people on this planet. How important is it that this issue be kept secret, as it were? Let's just assume, for the sake of argument, for all of our skeptical listeners out there, and we're glad you're here too, listen up and make your own decision. Let's just assume that this is real, what you're saying. What are the stakes involved here with, say, organized religion and others who would hold us in bondage to our time here and our time here forever?
Well, we have to make it very clear what we're up against here. There's the organized religion, which is tied up with tremendous amounts of money, as you can imagine.
Virtually unlimited.
Yes, that's right. And when this breaks, like it is breaking at the moment, they're going to lose their monopoly on the life-after-death industry. They've put conditions on getting into the next world.
You got to pay your dues and...
That's right. You see,
present your credentials or you don't get in.
This is why the religionists or the priests, the professionals, have joined forces with their most deadly enemies, the materialists. The when you're dead merchants, because all the time Orthodox science is starting from the base that when you're dead, oblivion. The only alternative to that is the religionist at the moment. So everybody goes over to the priest. But once they find out that Orthodox science has got it desperately wrong, that we do survive death, we do have a soul, then the priests lose their monopoly. Because everybody survives death, including atheists and rationalists and skeptics. And I'm a raging skeptic. It's got to be good to impress me. You know?
The idea of subatomic life after death is something we need to spend just a couple of minutes on as well.
Yes.
The emptiness of the universe we covered last time, but basically that 95 or 99.5% out there that appears to be nothing but nothing, as they say in the country, miles and miles of... miles and miles, is actually full. It is a fabric of life, of living energy, in your view, that gives birth to and actually projects the reality that we know as three-dimensional physics.
Everything is coming from the invisible part of the universe. The definition of subatomic physics is simply the study of the invisible, everything that's beyond our five physical senses. And that's the reality. If you look at the QED book by Professor Richard Feynman, even a cursory glance at it, you can see that everything is coming from the invisible part of the universe. Suns, moons, planets, us, the lot.
Ron Pearson's description of what a black hole is was extraordinary. And for all of you able to go back and listen to that program online, it's in my archives. Or, by all means, pay attention during the program tonight. We'll tell you how to get tapes of that program and this one. I think you're going to want to have them. This is truly again, groundbreaking historic radio and material for you to consider. I'm not here to tell you it's real or it's not real. I'm here to investigate to the best of my ability and bring you the facts as our guests have assembled them, and I can do so only as long as you're listening. And that's what's so wonderful about my audience, Michael. Whether they agree with me or not, they are incredibly great listeners.
Well, that's great. And all I want them to do is check out what I'm saying. And as you know, all the references are on my website. And I'll bend over backwards to help anybody who makes an effort to find out.
You have, and I've been getting, by the way, Michael's mail. He CCs some copies to me. He is always ready and able to answer intelligent email to the best of his ability to help people understand where they are now with their research, scientific research. Michael is a lay scientist, as it were, a researcher. Ron Pearson is a full-blown professor, lecturing professor. He is...
No, he's not a professor, Jeff. Must get our facts right, because our enemies are waiting to pounce
Well, he's lectured...
On the flagrant mistake.
But he has lectured in a university setting for a long time.
Professional university lecturer, yes.
Understand.
Yes,
all right, but the point is, let's throw the titles away just for a minute. His credentials are extraordinary, so much so that he was recently invited and, in fact, did give an address to Mr. Hawking's students.
Yes, he was invited by the students to the Cambridge University.
Which is quite a salute, and not only that, but the international gathering of the Sir Isaac Newton Society, I guess, invited him to give the keynote speech, or one of them.
Yeah, that was a big breakthrough, getting invited to St. Petersburg,
right.
Russia. Yeah.
Okay, well, professor or not, Ron Pearson is an eminent scientist and was on the program with Michael last time. We have two guests who will join us shortly, two women who have lost children, or have they? Stay tuned. Welcome back. I'm Jeff Rentz with Michael Roll. That's R-O-L-L. And you will be able to visit his website momentarily by clicking right below his name at the top of my website, rentz.com, R-E-N-S-E.com. And we're getting close to 6 million hits a month now, total hits. Thanks to all of you. And remember, the stories and headlines don't disappear. They stay on my website permanently. Look over to the left-hand side. Look at data pages. Each one of those is a category. A remarkable assemblage, a library, if you will, of material from those particular disciplines and research areas. So enjoy, use, download, print them out, and spread them around. Michael, okay, we have set the stage here, pretty much. We'll have two guests joining us shortly. What else do we want to put down on the table for our first-time listeners tonight to help them understand this whole issue of subatomic, that void out there, which common science calls the nothingness of space? As I can, in a moment or two, try to recreate what Ron said, and maybe you can add to it. Ron Pearson said that there is so much energy out there in the ether, as it were. Take the smallest atomic particle, take the smallest subatomic particle, and across each particle you could lay thousands of filaments of the ether, of a solid energy life form that clearly has its own consciousness. This is the universal God. This is what we're talking about, and it's not to be found through the eyes of most contemporary science in terms of your and Ron's work. Can you add to that?
Yes. This new way of thinking of things isn't really new, because it goes back to the great Greek scientists and philosophers. It's nothing new. It's not the New Age teaching this. We're going back to Pythagoras, Socrates, and Plato, who all said there's a huge universe out there we can't see and sense. And as Sir Oliver Lodge said, the inventor of radio, he always referred to the ether. And everything depends on somebody, a scientist coming along and discovering what the ether is made of. And Sir Oliver Lodge made this very important statement that the makeup of the ether will have to wait as a problem for the future, because they were nowhere near it in 1920s when Sir Oliver Lodge made that statement. But the future's here now, and we've got scientists, and especially Ronald Pearson, coming up with the makeup of the ether, which what makes up our etheric bodies, you see.
Quite. So we can look at the human being as a physical vessel and then an etheric body. People call it the soul, the spirit, whatever.
What we're dealing with on planet Earth is purely a spacesuit. You've got to operate in this spacesuit to operate on planet Earth.
Yeah.
But driving the spacesuit, the human body, is the life force, that the most important thing. And that analogy you gave last week was first class. However brilliant the motor car, wonderful the motor car is totally useless without the driver. And the same as a piano, totally useless without the pianist. And that's all it is, the physical body. It's only a vehicle that we use to drive for the short time we're on Earth. And it's only designed to last for a short time, as you know.
Oh, yes. The idea of subatomic is rather hard for some people, but let's go there just for a moment or two through the mind of your partner and friend, Ron Pearson. We have an atomic particle, which is, of course, a nucleus with various and sundry things orbiting around it. Take me down one step from that, just in layman's terms, Ron.
Well, yes, in layman's terms, which is so exciting, really, and I can speak in layman's terms because I'm an art student, and I force these whiz kids to make me understand it. So when you take on board that our physical bodies are made of invisible stuff, you can't see the protons, neutrons, and electrons that make up our physical body, not even through the most powerful microscopes. So, right, we are made of invisible stuff. So it's no longer fantastic to have something invisible break away from the physical body at death. That's been the big puzzle, you see. So and that's what's happened. Etheric body that breaks away from our physical body has got to be made of something. You can't be made of nothing. So
Ronald
Pearson has just simply come forward
with
the makeup of what this physical body is made of. Much finer subatomic particles than our protons, neutrons, and electrons.
They are in turn made of something, of course.
That's right, and that's what Ron's put. He's put a structure to the ether. His published work in Russia by the Russian Academy of Sciences following the Sir Isaac Newton conference is called Quantum Gravitation and the Structured Ether. He's put a structure to that ether that was missing. They always refer to the ether, but there's no way they had put a structure to it in these early days, you see.
People reflexively think ether and they think nothing.
Yeah, well, they've got to think something now, because the orthodox scientists have now realized their terrible mistake in doing away with the ether, and they've brought it back under a new fancy name, which they call the Quantum Energy of the Vacuum.
Indeed, the quantum energy of the vacuum.
That's the new name for the ether.
They're edging their way back toward reality here. It's very funny. And we'll be right back with Michael Roll in just a couple of minutes. I'm Jeff Rentz. Glad you're here. This is a keeper, as they say, so stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Jeff Rentz, coast to coast on a couple hundred radio stations around these United States, and of course on the internet worldwide. Hello to everyone scattered around this ever more troubled globe of ours. Stay tuned, and we will see what happens this year. It's sort of all up to us as to where we go collectively. At least we can think good thoughts. We may not be able to control those dark forces at the top, but start applying ourselves individually, mentally, emotionally, because there is strength in prayer, however you want to phrase it. And I think the ether, Ron and Michael, have shown us, at least in the last program, does respond to that. Would you agree with that, Michael?
Yes. As you think, so you attract. You think good thoughts, then you'll attract good people in the invisible part of the universe. You think rotten thoughts, then you'll automatically attract rotten people. Because don't forget, all these rotten people go into the next world as well, and they don't suddenly change overnight.
No, that's a good point. All right, let us talk now about mediums a bit and materialization and materializing mediums, mediums who can do that, bring it about. How does it work?
A materialization medium is the only one we're interested in on the scientific side, because it must be repeatable experiments.
Uh-huh.
And that's the only medium we can work with, a materialization medium. They actually prove survival. Well, I'm not knocking other mediums. Mental mediums do a great job giving personal evidence that we've lost loved ones. They do a great job. But on the scientific side, we must have repeatable experiments, and only a materialization medium can deliver the goods, so to speak.
How many of those are around, and how do you find
them? Well, they're very rare. I mean, I think one of the main reasons why we're a bit pushed for really good mediums is for hundreds of years they've been murdered. And it's an inherited gift. It's a bit like murdering all the musicians. If you murder all the musicians, we'd be a bit short of musicians.
Uh-huh.
So for hundreds of years, these mediums have been immediately murdered. I mean, they were called witches.
Sure.
It was the lucky ones who were burnt at the stake or drowned. The vast majority were slowly tortured to death. And so if you do that for hundreds of years, you're going to be a bit short of mediums, which we certainly are.
Yes, and even to this day, the materialization mediums strike a very low profile and are, I guess, subject and victimized by scare tactics, intimidation, threats.
Yes, they're incredibly dangerous to the establishment. I mean, you'll hear this as the story unfolds. I came onto the scene in 1983 to this wonderful medium that we had in England here, which Gwen Byrne and Pat Jeffrey are going to talk about. And I came in when they were fully developed. It takes time to develop one of these mediums, and Pat Jeffrey and her husband Barry had spent a great deal of time doing this early developing phase. So I can only speak when I came in 1983, when it was fully developed and people from the next world were walking around the room talking to each other as I'm talking to you.
Yes.
So that's where we came in, and that's where I took action. But when I came in and took action and hit everything on a scientific level, I called in Professor Archie Roy, an astrophysicist, because you've got to have a qualified chap doing the filming and everything, to go in with the cameras and actually film Pat Jeffrey and Gwen Byrne being reunited with their dead children. And he witnessed what I witnessed, and I was so thrilled to get this off my shoulders. It's such the greatest scientific breakthrough in history, as far as
mm-hmm.
I was concerned,
mm-hmm.
this was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was being taken off my shoulders by this professor of astrophysics. And I was very relieved. But the fact that I did that and put everything on a scientific level, I'm afraid, destroyed this medium, because the establishment forces heard that I had got a professor of astrophysics to go in and film this, and the medium's life was immediately threatened, that if she went ahead with these experiments, then not only would they kill her, they'd kill her whole family as well. All anonymously, of course, on the telephone.
Right.
But understandably, it frightened the medium to death.
Kill her and her whole family.
Oh, yeah, and she backed out on us, so we lost the goose that laid the golden scientific eggs.
Right.
So we're going to have to be terribly careful in future. We've learned by that mistake. So next time we get one of these mediums that's kind enough to call in the scientists, we're going to have to do it all in secret. And the incredible thing is, Jeff, that this medium didn't take one penny for the incredible inconvenience that she was imposed on.
No, she put her life on the line.
Yes, and all she got for that was to have a life threatened and terrible lies told
about
it.
Tell us the mechanics as you understand them, as to how a materialization medium actually works. Why does that person have to be in the room to facilitate materialization of those who have gone home, so to speak?
Yes, well, the analogy is quite simple. It's you've got a medium is only a go-between. Like a microscope, you can't see microbes without the medium called the microscope,
right.
And you can't see the invisible signals hitting your television area without the medium in your front room, the television set.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we're going to contact people, you've got to work on a much higher frequency than a television set works on, and that's why we have to work with a human medium. Now, the human mind and brain is a far more sophisticated instrument than anything invented by human beings, as you know. So if we can catch hold of one of these or come across one of these wonderful mediums that has this gift, let's use them. And all that happens is the medium just sits in the corner of the room and is a totally passive, doesn't take any part in the experiment whatsoever. But in the vicinity of that medium, scientists in the invisible part of the universe can actually teleport people from their wavelength into our wavelength for a number of hours. But you've got to have the instrument in the corner of the room to do it.
So okay, a couple questions come to mind. We'll come back and answer those. And we have standing by to join us, Gwen and Pat, two mothers. So stay right there. Glad you're with us tonight.
You're listening to Jeff Rentz. And now, here's Jeff.
Welcome back. Survival after death, what we call death, is the topic tonight. You're going to hear some extraordinary people in a few minutes who have had contact, full materialization contact with their lost sons. Survival after death. It's the oldest question of all, I guess. Dying is as natural as being born, really. Immortality is as natural as it can be. It's a physical phenomenon. It's just one of those things, as Michael Roll and Ron Pearson have established to their satisfaction. Subatomic, as it is called, life after death. But in reality, we are of the ether. We are the ether. We simply stray from the ether and project into this three-dimensional, some people call it a prison. I don't know. I don't know what it is, Michael, but it's when you read the newspaper, you get to wondering, good Lord, what's this all about?
How about a penal colony, I think?
Yeah, well, it's been described that way, too, by some alleged ETs who say this place is just a joke. All right, I want to go one more area before we get to our guest, and that is to go back and do a little bit of work to acknowledge and honor Sir William Crookes and what he did. Give us some more examples of that man's wizardry, what they did to him, and how long it was before he was recognized as the genius he was.
Yes, well, in 1870, in the middle of the Victorian era, when all this so-called paranormal phenomenon was really taking
off. It was big time back then.
It was big time, yes, and quite rightly so. It was a big breakthrough, as we hoped, obviously. And Sir William Crookes came in to look into this very carefully and to poo-poo it, to stop this nonsense once and for all.
He was a debunker. He was a skeptic.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, we should all be skeptics, don't forget, Jeff. I don't want anybody gullible. I want them to check everything out very carefully, so be very skeptical.
But at least he had the integrity to go about it in a logical way, and he found blew his cork.
Well, thank goodness he came across what we've been talking about, a materialization medium. I'm sure this was fed to him by the etheric scientists. Don't forget we've got a huge etheric team helping us in the next world, so they fed him, obviously, this wonderful medium called Florrie Cook, a young girl of 16. And he took her into his laboratory in his house, and his wife also took part in the experiments, incidentally. So when the accusations of being a sex maniac come into it, it must be the greatest sexual yeah. revolution in scientific history, because yeah. because his wife took part in the experiments as well as his British scientific
right. Well, they did a pretty good thorough smear job on him back then.
Yes, they had to wait until he died because he was such a great scientist, president of the Royal Society.
Sorry.
But when he died in 1919, some complete non-entity called Walter Mann floated the diabolical lie that he was having sexual relations with the young medium.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what has stuck. That's what's come down to us now in history, that Sir William Crookes was a liar, a cheat, a crank, a fraud, and he was also, they've tagged on, he was a sex maniac.
Was
I mean,
that?
That's desperation stuff. I mean, it's starting to rebound on them now. So all the professional records are saying about
right.
Sir William Crookes is that he was gullible.
Is that where the term, the common term, crook, came from, a corruption of his once good name back then?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, well,
no, it doesn't come from that.
But just a little humor there.
Yeah, I know. You're the only joke here. If you look in the dictionary, he's such a great scientist. He's even in the dictionary because he's...
Yeah.
The pioneer of subatomic physics.
All right, well, we're going to, as they used to do in the old Soviet Union, rehabilitate Sir William Crookes.
Good.
Put him back where he belongs, which is among the great and the pantheon of science of the last century, and this one as well. We'll make sure that happens. All right, one other story here, and then I'm going to bring our two guests on, introduce them, and then the next hour we'll get into their stories. The American public, I think most everyone know, even children know, the name Houdini. They think of Houdini as a magician. They think of Houdini as a very unusual man. But they don't understand the reality of what really happened when he died and what his wife was able to do. So tell us that story, if you would.
Yes, this is very important. And I just want to repeat what your Hollywood film showed. They actually told the truth that Houdini set up codes with his wife to try and... come back to her to prove if there is survival. And he says, when I die, if there's anything in it, I'll come back to you somehow or other, and I'll hit you with these codes we've set up.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. He came across an American medium called Arthur Ford, I think based in New York, and Mrs. Houdini ended up in front of him, and he says, right, I've got your husband here, and I'm going to prove that he survived by hitting you with the codes that you set up. And he hit her with all the codes in perfect sequence. And, of course, she was thrilled to bits, and she signed a sworn affidavit to that effect,
mm-hmm.
that beyond any shadow of doubt, her husband mm-hmm. has survived because he's come through and given her these codes.
Mm-hmm.
But, unfortunately, she was a Roman Catholic. And the priest got to hear about this,
mm-hmm.
and they literally put the fear of Christ up Mrs. Houdini, and understandably she retracted her statement that she had sworn and signed affidavit.
Yeah.
So that's where we are there.
Well, one of the nice kudos for the Hollywood film industry that they deserve. They did it right.
Yes, I'm so thrilled. I haven't seen the film, but I know that they did it right. Yeah.
All right. Okay, let's have you go ahead and introduce our two guests, special guests tonight. Gwen first, and then we'll do Pat second. We have about 6 minutes to do that, so we'll bring them both on in style.
Yes. Pat was the first one, really, because she set it up.
Okay.
And every time that this medium called Rita Gould demonstrated her wonderful gift, it was done in Pat Jeffrey's house. This is why Pat's been reunited with her dead 16-year-old son on something like 300 repeatable experiments, because it was always happening in her house, you see.
Mm-hmm.
That's why so such a vast number of times she's been reunited
mm-hmm.
with her 16-year-old son, who was killed on his motorcycle.
All right, let's say hello to Pat. Are you standing by there, Pat? Can you hear me? Hello, Pat.
Hello.
Hi, Pat.
Hi.
Hi, we hear you fine. Can you hear us okay?
I can hear you, yes. I couldn't hear Michael very well, but I can hear you.
Good, all right. If I might, we have just a couple minutes, and then I want to bring on Gwen as well. Then we'll take a short break and come back and hear your story in detail at the start of the next hour, just in a few minutes. But you lost your son when, Pat? When was he killed?
He was killed on 23rd of November 1973.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, it wasn't his own motorcycle. He was a pillion passenger on a friend's motorcycle.
I see.
And he died that night, yes.
It is perhaps the most horrible experience that humans can go through, to lose a son or a daughter like that.
I think so, yes, very much so, yes.
It is incomprehensible to those who have not been there and had to experience it. At what point did you come across the concept that there might be a means to figure out that your son wasn't really dead, he was just somewhere else? When did this occur to you? How did you hear about the whole idea of contact?
Well, I have to admit that my husband and I, we were interested in the subject quite a few years before this happened to us.
Uh-huh.
So we knew a bit about it and had done some investigations. And then, of course, this happened to us. And so then we were determined that we would, go into it and see if we could get to physical mediumship whereby you get the materialization.
Because
that obviously is the ultimate,
yes.
To get materialization.
Yes, that would be the ultimate. Let me now, if I might, have Michael very quickly introduce Gwen, and we'll bring her on.
Yes, and now Gwen came in later. She'll tell you how, as Pat's developed with this medium they had come across, a little boy materialized called Russell, and he quite simply said, "I wonder if you get hold of my mum and dad and let them know I'm still alive. Here's their telephone number." And that's when Gwen and Alf Byrne and her family came on the scene, because Pat, Jeffrey and Barry, her husband, actually telephoned the Byrne family and told them this wonderful news.
And didn't know them from Adam?
No, I don't think so, no, but mm-hmm. Gwen will enlarge on that
Good.
Side of
All
it.
Right. Gwen, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay. I don't hear too well. I can hear you.
Well, we can hear
you. I didn't hear Pat terribly well.
Okay, well, I want to thank you both for getting up so dreadfully early in the morning over there.
Well, no, we haven't been to bed. I haven't anyway.
See, there are two ways to do these late-night radio programs. You can either stay up and tough it out, or you can go to sleep and try to wake up.
That's the best way, to stay up. I'm sure Pat's done exactly the same.
All right, and you lost a son, Gwen. How old?
Yes.
How old was...
Russell was coming up to his 10th birthday, and he passed in 1963 with cancer.
Ah.
And like Pat, I did search for him, yes. But I searched in a different way. I went to mental mediums, and I went all over the place searching. And I found that, yes, he existed, but I didn't know anything about physical phenomena at all.
I see.
Absolutely nothing.
Okay,
I've never heard of it.
All right, very good. Stand by, Gwen and Pat. And Michael, we'll come back in just a couple minutes.
I'm here.
Okay, stand by. We're going to take a little break, ladies, and we'll come right back and hear your stories in more detail. Okay, Michael, we are pretty well set. We'll come back and let you kind of lead the way, and we'll hear from Pat first and tell the story. Anything you want to add in our last 30 seconds here before we take our break?
Only that I think it's a wonderful story they've got to tell. And as you said in your introduction, it's the most greatest love story in history.
Very good. All right. We'll take a break and come right back. I'm Jeff Rentz. Glad you're here. www.rentz.com. That's R-E-N-S-E. News stories going up for you around the clock. News you will find in many cases nowhere else. Enjoy, and we'll be back.